The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Arturia, Avid, Source Elements, and RSBE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Gillian Rogers, and in this week's edition, I'm joined by Ashaya and William Whitman. We're going to be discussing the things we loved in August because, it's not August anymore. So we do one every month. Thankfully this month, like, loads of stuff happened because it's been a little bit slow over the summer. We have a short list. I think in the established fashion that we've been doing these for a little while now, I'm just going to hand it over to Ashaya. Come on, start us off.
Oh, okay, sure. I was actually going to hand it over to you to ask.
Hand it back. We can do.
Hand it back to you. Yeah. No, because you've tried Pro Tools Sketch from Avid.
It's true. We could talk about this. It's a technology preview, so don't go trying to download it. There is a sign up, I think, so you can get at least the app, I think. But for anyone who hasn't heard of it, what it is it's a new feature coming to Pro Tools software. It's going to be a new window. And basically, it's that kind of non-linear grid type thing that you get in, well, Ableton Live is the most famous example of it. They kind of thought of it, but it's available in other places. Live Loops in Logic, Bitwig. If you've never tried Bitwig, it's actually quite cool. I quite like Bitwig, but not enough to use it. Anyway, it's a new window and you can fire off clips, MIDI or audio in any order you like. And the idea is ideas generation. You know, why tie yourself down to this stuff in this order when you're not quite there yet?
So they're called scenes, right?
The clips live in cells, which are the grid squares or where they're oblongs. And then the horizontal rows are called scenes. And then you can sequence scenes in order and make an arrangement. And you can take all of these things and you can pull them out at any point over into the edit window in Pro Tools. The thing I haven't mentioned is it's also an iPad app. And that's the first time that we've had a bit of Pro Tools where you can kind of like manipulate the content rather than sort of just mix parameters and stuff like you can from the control app. And this is what I was playing with. It's kind of cool. You know, it's not really for me. It's not my kind of thing because basically this stuff really suits electronic music and stuff that's more loop-based.
Yeah, I can see just from briefly watching that video that you did how it could work pretty well with sort of beats and loops, that sort of thing, and make things a bit more kind of streamlined and easy. William, have you tried this? Have you seen this?
I've produced things, music where the artist was working in Ableton, so I'm glancingly familiar with Ableton, but I haven't actually hands-on with that either. It does my brain in a little bit in terms of the workflow. So, I mean, this is going to be one of those things where it's clearly not for me, but I can see for that audience, it's a really smart idea for Avid or whoever owns it this week to be brushing into this territory. I mean, it seems to me people who are used to working in this kind of free form and then drag it into a timeline method are going to find this really helpful.
I'm not sure the what I've seen I don't think is the end of the story by any means. I mean, I was playing with the pre-release version anyway, and there's some stuff that I'd like to see in it, some stuff that, like, well, you could add this, you could add that. Well, there's always that at the, you know, pre-release stage in software anyway.
Does it do the sort of tempo adjustment and instantly putting a loop into time and all that sort of
thing? All of that, no problem at all. The thing that and something I do quite like is, I mean, presumably, I haven't used it in Pro Tools, but presumably you'll be able to create loops on the timeline in Pro Tools and then drag them out and then experiment with the arrangements and what you're going to do with them, then pull them back. Something I do really like is the fact that the file format is it's self-contained. It's monolithic. The media is embedded within the sketch file.
Okay.
Unlike a Pro Tools session, which is referenced. But something that's quite cool is you can pin a Pro Tools sketch file to any number of Pro Tools session files. That kind of makes things a little easier, you know, so that you can play with different arrangements, and it just makes things a little more streamlined. I thought that was a nice touch.
But does that mean that mean when you open a Pro Tools session, it will know to open a particular sketch?
Exactly. Exactly. And obviously, if you pull it into the session folder, then you know it's not going to be hugely complicated to archive your stuff. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, the main thing I think is interesting about it is that, I mean, clearly Avid have been making serious moves to try to get away from this idea that Pro Tools is cool for editing and mixing, but you need to create your stuff in Logic first or whatever it might be, which a lot of people have got that attitude, and I understand why. And also, they're really trying to attract those kind of users who want features like this. So if we've got kind of, you know, people who are using Pro Tools as a direct replacement for their dusty analog tape machine in the corner, then, you know, it's not that much of a surprise that they're not going to be too excited about this. But if you're a beat maker, you know?
Yeah. No, I think it's a really good idea, because the only reason why I went over to Logic, obviously, in the first place, because I really liked Pro Tools and I was introduced to Pro Tools doing audio, recording vocals, which is great for vocals. But at the time, and it was a few years ago, it was just really, really difficult to sort of create beats. And,
it's a peer group thing.
MIDI, yeah. And so everyone was saying, you need Logic for that.
So the question really is, like, kind of, you know, of your peers, are a significant number of them Logic users?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There you go. William, of your peers, are a significant number Pro Tools users?
Almost everybody.
Exactly. Because,
of course, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
And it's the tool that suits the job, but also it's, I mean, this I've seen, you know, time and time and time again of you know, it's which DAW should I use? You know, I mean, I've had this conversation about video editing software, and, you know, which video editing package should I use? And it's like, well, what do the people that you know use? Because use that, mm-hmm. because you've got that support network, and, you know, that's maybe less important these days than it used to be years ago, but it's still pretty important, I'd say.
Yeah, well, there's also the file interchange issues. It's like, if any studio that I'm called to go to is going to have Pro Tools, they're not likely to have something else. Yeah. And it's the same thing, I think, in video world, if you're handing projects back and forth, right? Yeah.
They'd probably do it a bit more, but it's still, I mean, everything that I've managed to stay away from OMFs and AFFs, AAFs. I can never even remember whether it's AAF or A. Is it? Never mind. But the point is, my ignorance speaks for itself on that one, because everything I know about them is that kind of like, yeah, they work as long as you know what you're doing, but it's not as simple as pressing a button.
Ever wondered what it's like to mix an entire album for Kanye or layering vocals for Chris Brown? Join your hosts, Cash and G, every fortnight as we sit down with some of your favorite artists, producers, and engineers to talk everything music, brought to you by Avid Pro Tools.
That sounds great.
Yeah, because when we spoke to Eli Kranzberg on the a few weeks ago, I think it was, on Logic Pro for iPad, obviously Logic has massively improved things like clip gain and adjustments and stuff like that. So now sort of Pro Tools are kind of improving in the area of MIDI and the things that Logic was traditionally good at, which is, I like the sort of competition there between those two DAWs. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think now they're competing with Ableton as well, is the idea here. So I think it's smart. I mean, it's inevitable that they're all going to chase each other to some degree. And it's nice to have, I think it's nice to not have to leave a particular ecosystem if it gives you everything you need.
It's very true that, I mean, DAWs have been converging for as long as there's been DAWs. You know, and I mean, if we're going to say, hey, you know, so Pro Tools is Ableton now, I've seen people say that, and I'm going, well, okay, but, you know, you could say that Logic and Pro Tools and all of them basically nicked the, you know, the edit window from the arrange page in Cubase. I mean, they thought of it first, like 30 years ago, but like, kind of, it's like, I know, it's been going on. It's just how it happens. So, you know, it's true, but it's also kind of unimportant in my head.
I mean, that's how it happens with everything.
That's a good idea. I'll nick it unless I'm legally prevented from nicking it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It happens in everything. I mean, look at smartphones. I mean, you know, everything, from my prejudice point of view, everything the iPhone does all of a sudden turns up in every other format. But I mean, I'm sure people who have a Samsung phone look at it the other way around. But whatever it is, they're all chasing each other.
And if you go back to the 90s, phones look different from each other, and they don't anymore. You're quite right.
We can call it inspiration, right? Getting inspired.
I think we should move along, actually, because, I mean, as interesting as it is, we're spending a lot of time talking about something that isn't actually available yet.
Okay.
So I want to move on. I want to talk about the Focusrite Scarlett, the fourth gen Focusrite Scarlett, because I think that this is a great example of taking something that's really popular and making it better.
Yeah.
I want to go to William first. Have you checked out kind of what's new?
I have a little bit. I can't say that I can rattle off what the features are, but I do know an awful lot of people recording at home who use a Scarlett, and it seems to me it's, if not the most popular, one of the most popular, dare I say, budget-level interfaces.
I think you can definitely say budget. Yeah. I think they'd be fine with that. It's a I mean, I have one in my hand right here.
Oh, there you go.
And it's, I got this with, this is a great case of me not doing my research, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I got this and I thought, oh yeah, that'd be a cool thing because I could use that with my laptop when I'm away from home if I need to do, say, a podcast or a bit of screen cap video, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's no good for that at all. This is a third gen I've got. And the reasons it's no good at all are because it doesn't have loopback built in, which is really important when you're doing something like screen cap video, for example. And it doesn't have a juicy enough preamp to be able to drive my dynamic mic adequately. Mm. And in this new version,
but they've redesigned
it's
the
got
preamp,
both. So
they?
It's got plenty of gain, so I could easily drive this M201 off off the fourth generation box. And it's got loopback as standard, so there we go. I should add that mine's a Scarlett Solo, which is the tiny, tiny one. And some of the other ones of the third gen do have loopback, I think. But the one I bought didn't.
Yeah, I should say most people I know are sticking a dynamic microphone in front of a screaming loud guitar amplifier so that gain on the preamp hasn't been an issue for them. Yeah,
well, it's got auto gain. This is one of the new features, which is really cool.
That's the really interesting thing about this. That, again, that's one of those things that I think we're going to see more and more of.
Mm. Well, we're seeing a lot of it in some of the plugins we're discussing. I think auto gain is becoming a sort of a go-to feature for a lot of them. But what are some of the other... Don't they have... They've got new converters, redesigned mic pre.
The redesigned mic pre was a biggie for me. I noticed on the Vocaster that it had a really gainy mic pre, had like nearly 70 dB gain. And I went, oh, good. Okay, this is proper numbers now. And surprise, surprise, that same one turned up on the update for the Scarlett. So there we are.
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool. ClipSafe as well. Have you seen they've got
I'm a little unclear. I mean, I take it that that is sort of artificially, intelligently adjusting gain rather than it just being a limiter. But it's some sort of clip protection, which seems smart, again, on an interface aimed at the
particular market.
I don't
know about that, actually. That wouldn't pass me by. I mean, there is a way you can do it where you can do dual path, but on something this price point, I'd be astonished if it was that.
Right.
If it is,
how much is it? Is it still the same price as the previous, sort of 200?
That's the killer question, that is. I never look up how much things cost.
That is a good question.
Isn't it around £200 or something?
The 2i2 is £200. It's there was another thing as well that I thought was interesting was the air circuit thing
and the air mode.
Which was always analog. I mean, the original air thing was a transformer and changing the way that was configured, which obviously it hasn't been in the budget iteration of that, but it was still an analog process. But they've now built in some kind of saturation or something that adds a DSP process onto that in hardware, which I thought was a really interesting route to take. I don't know what the reasons for that were. I'm sure there were good ones, but yeah, they've done a lot with it. I think they've nailed it personally. What does anyone else think?
No, I think it's great.
Yeah, it's a hugely popular interface to begin with, and sort of staying on top of trend and making it better is exactly what you want them to do. So,
I mean, I have to say, times have changed, and there's some really keen competition
in
that area now. Some stuff that wasn't around a few years ago. I mean, I'd call out Audient, who've got two products in that space, both of which are great.
Yeah.
And they're very much kind of like, you know, careful. So if Focusrite hadn't nailed this, I think it would have been a bad thing. But I think actually, you know, I think, I mean, it's not up to me, future market trends, but, you know, I don't think they've got anything to worry about. Whereas if they drop the ball on it, they need to do something quite special because, like I say, these kind of products have got better.
But they've also, they've got sort of bundles as well. So they're giving away Pro Tools Artist, Ableton Live, that sort of thing, Splice membership as well. So they're really kind of aiming it at maybe beginners or sort of novices, home studio, that kind of thing, which has always been the Focusrite kind of...
They've certainly always been aimed at entry level, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's the right product for those people, you know.
But it's great for accessibility, to be honest, because you've got the quality is there. you know. Mm.
And thank goodness, considering the number of people who are buying insensitive dynamic microphones without understanding the the consequences of that down your signal chain. And it's like, yeah, it's all right, we've got you covered now, because that's been a thing I've moaned about for ages. I think it's yeses all round on this if we're doing it that way. I want to move it on because we mustn't loiter.
Why don't we go to Alan and Heath?
Because I'll talk for ages about how awesome I think this product I haven't seen.
That's great. That is great.
Aturia has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Aturia.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
All right, well, very briefly, this has been something I've been keeping an eye on for ages, just because I've been sort of quite aware that there's a bit of a gap between, yeah, you can have like a budget notepad mixer, and most people have got one tucked away somewhere. Mm. Or if you want to get any kind of digital mixer that's a proper digital mixer, with a couple of exceptions, pretty much you're talking a couple of £1,000 for anything that's reasonably usable. There's some really cheap stuff that you can do that's aimed at kind of podcasters and stuff that I've checked out and doesn't look all that interesting. There's a couple of things, but there's remarkably little in between those two things. And this serves that. So Alan and Heath are very local to me, the only pro audio company who are, but they're kind of 20 minutes away from me. And I know the guys over there. So I'm going to go and have a look. But the idea of it is it's touchscreen, but you've got a kind of touch and twist type interface on all of them, at least, so that you're not trying to necessarily adjust faders, just sliding your finger up and down a screen. It's all their FPGA stuff. It'll be very good technically. It's by no means a beginner thing. Just having that processing and having the routing capabilities and all of that kind of stuff in hardware and a mixer is really appealing to me. I'm not going to be buying something like that unless I can justify it to fitting into my studio, as well as being a handy thing for portable and for live use, because I'm in a band and this would be very handy in my band.
Yeah, I mean, they've got 3 different sizes, haven't they?
They have.
So
they have.
I think the smaller sizes would be quite good for sort of home studio.
The thing about it is it's a USB interface as well, which I've got to check out. It's class compliant on a Mac, and there's a driver for Windows. I'd need to check out how it works in practice, how flexible it is. But I see no reason why it wouldn't be good. But what I quite like is the idea of being able to record to a memory card as well, which is a really handy thing when you've got it available. Say, I mean, you can do that stuff on, I think the RMEs do it, certainly Metric Halo, you can capture to USB, that kind of stuff, which when we're doing things like this, for example, is quite a useful thing, because computers are computers after all. I think it's a really cool product. I've got an old notepad mixer, and the reason that I still have it is because it's just a flexible problem solver type thing, you know?
Mm.
And this is what I'm thinking, there must be a better solution than basically what we were using 30 years ago for that. And this, I think, might be about there. That's all I've got to say on this.
Well, they've got some good features for sort of ease of use, that type of thing, especially if you're new and semi-professional or something. They've got the gain assistant.
Again?
Another one with a gain assistant.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And on this, it really would be useful if you're using it live.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Just being, actually, everything's changed.
It looks very much geared towards live use to me.
Oh, it is. It is
even
very
by
much,
the, even
yeah.
by the way they've built it.
Yeah.
Mm, it's very durable. It's sort of all metallic and
it's a good point. This isn't a studio tool, but this is a live tool that I think could be useful for all sorts of reasons in a studio.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And they've also got some feedback assistants as well.
Yeah, I've used these before. These things have been around for a while. I think the DBX drive racks used to have them. And they've got some notch filters, and they're basically a semi-automated ringing out of a system. But it's also got floating filters, so that if it sees a narrow peak come up out of nowhere, it will stamp on it.
Well, that's handy.
It can be if you're not. This is great for self-operating band type things where you don't have an engineer.
Exactly.
And you're mixing from stage, because that's a bad place to be. But if you can just pop out front with an iPad, get it just about right, and then go back and be able to control stuff from stage.
And they assist with the effects as well, so you're sort of not going to drown in reverb if you don't know what you're doing, which is handy as
I'd
well.
I'd love to say that's never happened on one of my gigs, but it happened before. <Has it>?
Yeah, I also think for bands that might have, let's say the club is doing the front of house mix but don't have a dedicated monitor mixer, this could be really useful for a band who wants to just have something outside of the stage to do their own monitor mixing.
Uh-huh. Perfect for use with IEMs as well.
Exactly.
I mean, the bigger one's got two headphone outs, which are ideal for them for wired IEMs anyway. But if you took along a dedicated headphone amp as well, you could run all of those outputs out to that, and that could work very well as well.
Yeah, but two in-ear transmitters, that was my first thought as well. Mm-hmm. As you say, that seems to be a really really easy way to do that.
Oh, and really, of course there's an app, there's like a phone app so that you can set it up, sort of very simple thing, so it's like a More Me type thing that you can give to performers.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's, if you want to go there. But the whole point is doing this kind of stuff for, you know, around about £1,000 is really good value.
Yeah.
Compared to the alternatives. I was looking at the Yamaha DM3, which I thought looked like a fantastic mixer. But to get the decent one of those, you're spending, I don't know, nearly three times that much. And sure, that's got faders on it, but it's only got like eight of them, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Do you understand? I'm just looking at the biggest one, the 20B, which doesn't seem to have a screen or any sort of control on it. So I take it you're controlling that, what, via an iPad or a phone or something else? Is that, So for IEM world, it seems to me that one is the sort of the ideal solution.
It would do that very well. You're quite right. Yeah, and also things like that, they're quite popular for install use and stuff because they can have an iPad behind the bar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But yeah, it's the only thing that did annoy me looking at it is the smallest one doesn't have built-in Wi-Fi, and I think that's a shame.
Oh, yeah.
So because it's just kind of juggling boxes. Oh, and the other thing is, I mean, although it's a reasonably robust one, the two screen ones have external PSUs, which I think is a great shame.
That's annoying. Yeah. I think the two bigger ones have Bluetooth playback as well.
Yeah, oh, I hate Bluetooth.
I mean, that's not...
I hate Bluetooth, I really
not particularly reliable, but... Yeah. It's just
one of those things that Bluetooth is second only to anything to do with the printer for just kind of like, look, it's just talk to the other thing, please.
I don't think I would rely on Bluetooth.
No, it's fine for, you know, for just for music, you know, just a bit of music in between sets and stuff. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, but especially if you're going to use this in some sort of a noisy, crowded club, I don't think I'd be relying on Bluetooth.
No.
Yeah. Especially because you might get somebody... Yeah, anyway, never mind. We don't want to get into that.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
Okay, we're going to have to move quickly on this one. I wanted to talk about Sonox Voca, which is a cool vocals dedicated new thing from Sonox. When Sonox do something, they just do it really well.
Yeah.
And check it out. But actually, I want to skirt past that one. But anyone listening, if you don't know about Voca, do check it out. I tried it and I actually liked it. So, you know, that's a good start. But William told us about the thing called STL Tones Control Hub, which I think sounds really interesting. And I think we should talk about that instead in the time we've got left.
Absolutely.
William, start us off. Tell us what it is.
Well, Control Hub is their existing bit of software, which is, I guess you might call it a channel strip sort of thing. It has an EQ and a saturation and a dynamic section and a master EQ, et cetera, and some effects. And they sell various signature versions of it, so-and-so's chain, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
This new product is called Control Hub Tracer. And what I find really interesting about it is that it lets you capture the signal chain of your actual hardware you have access to, and then store it into this software, very much the way People know I bang on about the Kemper modeling guitar amplifier. Very much the way I can set up my guitar amp to sound the way I like it, mic it the way I like it, shoot it into the Kemper, and then the Kemper sounds almost exactly like that. And I can take that with me anywhere. This purports to let you shoot your API EQ or your Fairchild compressor or whatever you don't have access to all the time, shoot it into software and then have as many iterations of it as you need in,
that is very cool.
In their software, including an elaborate chain. So you could have that, let's say, that API EQ followed by your Fairchild, followed by, I don't know, your Sontech EQ in the master section. And I don't know. I haven't had a chance to play with it, to be honest. I'm just looking at the video and hearing about it, and it looks pretty interesting. And I just think this is going to be a wave of the future. We're going to see more and more of this ability to capture real hardware into software rather than somebody else's capture. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the danger there has always been, you know, I used to buy guitar app software and that you'd put up AC30 and I would say, that doesn't sound like my AC30. That doesn't sound what I want an AC30 to sound like. This lets you, at least in theory, capture the sound the way you like it to and sort of personalize your software choices, which I think is really,
how
really
does that
smart.
Work though? How do they do that?
Good luck with that.
What it is, I mean, we've had impulse responses for ages, and the thing with impulse responses is that's one setting, one instance, and one instant in time. So, for example, you could you can capture something like an EQ pretty well, actually. Something like a compressor. If you want to be able to use the compressor, you need to capture all of the different responses it might have. So you need to do something more thorough than that. And that can be done. And I mean, like, I don't know, like Focusrite were doing it with the liquid channel in hardware, like years ago. So you can do this. There's some stuff that's really hard to do, like what Liquid Sonics have done with time variant reverbs. And they've done all that work to capture stuff like the modulation in a Bricasti or something. And that's, again, going beyond what you can do with a standard IR. This is going to be something similar to that.
But Go ahead, sorry.
All right, really me. What I was going to say was just that this looks like a great way to be able to capture stuff yourself. I see they've got like a marketplace type thing set up where you can exchange and whatever.
Yes.
Which is fine, you know. But actually, having done some impulse responses, I've done a few good ones in the past just for reverbs, convolution stuff. And I've used them a lot, actually. And the reason I've used them a lot is because I captured them.
Yeah.
That, I think, and that ownership is what is the difference between creating a synth patch yourself or dialing up a preset. I'm always going to prefer the one I did because I did it.
Exactly. Or again, what I was saying, I don't want somebody else's idea of an AC30. I want my idea of an AC30. And in this case, I think I probably want my idea of how to set the Fairchild or whatever it is, or just the sound of the particular box that I own that I love. Mm. I was going to say they. I've seen some videos where they, for example, they tell you set your compressor to this to 4:1 and this particular attack and this particular release, and then you model it, profile it, whatever they're calling the method. And so it extrapolates, it probably runs some tones, some sort of sweeps through that, knowing that, okay, that's what 4:1 sounds like. Well, then now the software can figure out what 3:1 would have sounded like.
Because otherwise it needs some parameter control, which it can't do.
Well, it needs to know what your starting point is so that it can figure out the rest, at least theoretically. And again, I don't know if this particular product is brilliant. I mean, it might very well be. But I think this is definitely going to be, now that we're starting to see it, I think we're going to see everybody else in the software start to jump in.
If this one isn't the answer, then one of the next ones will be. Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's the idea, not the execution. Because none of us have tried it, but we're all quite keen on the idea as being a good one.
And how do you see?
Sorry, go ahead.
Ashley. No. I was going to ask just on the idea of sort of all the new technology and things like gain, sort of auto gain, and all the things that we're seeing sort of pop up. How are you seeing the future of kind of audio engineering?
I won't even have to wake up. I'll just tell the software to mix the record and.
There is an element of this. Something I can't help thinking is if I lived within striking distance of a decent dry hire place, which I obviously I don't, and I can't phone up one of the FX rentals or someone like that and say, oh, can I have whatever for a day's rental, because I live way, way, way too far away from London. But if I did, I could easily see myself indulging in kind of like getting some really desirable gear that I'd have no chance of, and being able to take ownership of it with something like this, something that works well.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea of that.
I really like it. Yeah.
And on the issue of their exchange or their marketplace or whatever they're calling it, the same thing exists in, I do have more experience in the camper world, and there is all that. And there are people who sell commercial profiles. You want a profile of a Dumble that nobody has, you can buy one. Mm. As long as you have the ability to demo it and see if it's something that you like to want to buy, then that can be really useful as well. Because as you say, you might not be able to hire in a Fairchild to profile, but somebody might have done one that you really like.
Mm. Oh, this isn't about getting results you can't get in other ways. It's about your relationship to the resource you have. And that's really important to me, because we've got one thing we don't have is not enough choice. That was a big double negative. But you know what I'm trying to say? We've got plenty of choices, and it's which ones. And what I quite like is this thing of having a restricted set of choices, because they have you perceive their value to be greater because of your relationship to that. And that's something that I think
it's
nice
very
about
different.
This.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw in one negative just because I'm a sod. so the one thing I don't like about this sort of mindset is I do think to some degree, at least in the short term, it will encourage this idea that if I only had a Fairchild, or if I only had some name your pricey bit of kit that you can't get your hands on, if I only had this one thing, my mixes would be brilliant. And I think there's an acquisition syndrome aspect to it. Amongst hobbyist recorders that I think is not a good trend.
Everybody has an inquisitive phase. I certainly did. And I think the only way that you can deal with that, it's so natural that the only way you can deal with it is to max out on it and realize its futility. And the faster you do that.
Yeah.
So because of that, it's, what's it called? Immersion therapy? Is that what it's called? It's that thing.
I think it's aversion therapy.
No. Immersion. It's the opposite of that. And what it is, if somebody's scared of spiders, you can either systematically desensitize them by like saying the word spider to them, then showing them a picture of a spider and putting a small spider on their hand. Yeah. Or the alternative to that, which is high risk, admittedly, and people don't do it, is to just like throw them in a tank full of spiders and go, see how you get on. And you'll find out there's nothing to be afraid of. Well, I don't suggest doing that, but if you're going to just basically just kind of like throw yourself into all the gear in the world and just figure out as quickly as you can that it's not the gear, it's you. And
I mean, it's the same with plugins, for example, because I had more of a thing with plugins because they're more affordable and more kind of... for the type of work that I do. But I sort of got loads and loads of different plugins, tried loads out, and realized that there's sort of a handful that I use all the time that I really wanted to sort of, invest in properly. But
That's exactly it. It's that thing of instead of saying, I need one more thing, most of us are really finding we go back to the same five or six things we use all the time.
Exactly.
We don't need 100 of them.
Yeah.
Of course we do. We are starting to run along, so we should go to find a week.
Cool.
RSPE Audio Solutions. Design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
William, what is your find of the week?
Okay, so along the same similar lines, my find of the week is from IK Multimedia. It is their Tonex pedal and software that accompanies it, which is their sort of mini... much more affordable Kemper killer, at least in theory. It is guitar amp profiling software and a little hardware pedal that will store those profiles in it. I think 150 of them, I think, store in the pedal.
Okay, nice.
So again, you can work in their universe of the included profiles, or you can go on their exchange, and which they call ToneNet, and find a lot of user-generated and shared and also commercially for sale profiles. Or more important, you can use the software to profile your own amplifiers the same way that the Kemper does. I will say that the IK profiling process takes a lot longer. Maybe it's a lot more thorough. I can't say I think one sounds better than the other, but that's a good thing because the Kemper sounds brilliant and so does this. It really does capture an amplifier almost indistinguishably from the original. And it's about a, I think it's about a $400-ish affair for the pedal. The software is available separately if you just want to work in the box. But the pedal is, I think, purposely designed to sit on a pedal board, unlike a Kemper. It's quite small and gives you the ability to stomp pedal between three profiles, which for most guitar player gigs is probably more than enough. And the idea that it just sits on your pedal board with your other effects pedals, if that's the world you live in, I think is a very smart marketing choice, different from the Kemper. The Kemper has all the reverbs and delays and choruses and pitch shifts and all that stuff built in. This is just amplifier modeling and a bit of reverb. But I think it finds its niche because of that, and also as opposed to being $2,000-ish, as again, we're talking about $400-ish. So I think it's quite a brilliant little product.
I am aware of it. I know it's been well thought of by people who are professionally fussy about guitar stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like,
yeah. I've yet to see somebody hate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Okay. Ashay, what was yours?
Yes. I don't know if you've seen this. It's the Akon Digital Remix. Goodness, it's a mouthful. Akon Digital Remix Real-Time AI Stem Separation Plugin.
That is a mouthful.
Yeah, it really
I
is.
I have seen it, actually. And also, I don't know how similar this is to the equivalent feature in Akon's Acoustica, but I've played with that. I mentioned it on a podcast a few weeks ago, actually. And I think it's brilliant just because it's so useful just for figuring out parts in records if you're trying to learn them.
Oh, yeah, I remember you saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I've seen the video that we put up on the announcement, and, yeah, it looks awesome. What about you, William? What do you think?
Well, that technology is obviously getting better. I mean, it takes us into the realm of the Abbey Road software that they use to separate the Beatles and that sort of thing, which I think they should be executed for.
That's another thing. What about tuning? Sort of tuning... I think I saw a YouTube video about someone tuning a live performance of an old kind of band that was perfectly fine.
Yeah,
as they
see,
were.
Well, that's the thing, that if you're going to separate something into a classic record into stems and then tune it and beat detective it and correct it, then again you should be shot. But I think Julian put his finger on it. I think I played on something a couple of weeks ago that was a cover of an old record for a television show, and somebody used the Isotope version of the separation software to send all of us, like, oh, here's the isolated bass part, here's the isolated drums, here's the, and just as a tool to learn what actually went on in the original so we could forensically recreate it, I think is a brilliant use of this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what their intended market is going to be, but
I mean,
do think...
Yeah, no, it's good. They've got, it separates into five sort of different stems. So you've got vocals, piano, bass, drums, and other. And there's a sensitivity knob as well, so you can sort of adjust the level of spill versus artifacts. But yeah, a good thing about this as well, it's real time, so this
that is a big difference.
They're
artifacty, and people who are saying, oh, this isn't good enough for release quality, blah blah blah, no it isn't, you know, we know, and it's but it's getting better all the time, so, you know,
exactly.
Two and two together, you know. It's only going in one direction.
Exactly. Another thing you can do with it is separate the stem outputs and then sort of work on them separately as individual tracks, and maybe what William absolutely hates, maybe put an auto tune on the vocals or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I just get that and can, I don't know, do some quantizing on the tambourine in Time's on My Side or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. Well, one thing they're showing in the demo videos is just basically rebalancing. Oh, look, we can make the drums louder or the vocal lower. Yeah. It's like, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but I suppose there's a world in which that's useful.
There is a downside to this for me, which is that I enjoy an open mic night. I have an open mic night down at my local, and it's great fun. And I always groan internally whenever anybody wants to sing to playback, because that doesn't belong in an open mic night. And the amount of automatic karaoke versions of songs that people are going to be bashing out and
annoying me.
Anyway, no, rant over.
Well, definitely karaoke is the most sort of obvious.
It's the thing, it works out best anyway, because it's much better at taking things away than it is than isolating. So, you know, and it's
yeah, and I suppose I don't mind, or I'm not as irritated by the karaoke aspect as by the idea that somebody thinks they're going to be remixing Led Zeppelin, you know.
Mm. Oh, luckily, if there's a weak spot on this stuff at the moment, it's guitars, just because, you know, AI, you can train AI to what a piano sounds like or a bass, but guitars are much less clearly defined thing. So I think that's why it ends up in the other category. So, you know, it's like, remove the synth from this and going, okay, that's quite a broad,
very broad term. Yeah.
Do you know, does anybody know, I mean, I haven't played with it hands-on, so, and I know listeners hate that when I say that, but does anybody know how, for example, the demo video made it sound like it was really good at taking the vocal out, but do you know if the vocal, I'll come back to the Beatles just to annoy Russ. let's say the vocal's entirely on the left. How does it deal with that?
I think
does
it'd it do be that? Right.
You still think it is? It's not just a center phase.
No,
sort of
oh
issue.
No, it's not that. But what I think it would struggle with is it'd do a better job on a dry vocal than it would a reverby one.
Right, it would leave the reverb. You're suspecting.
I don't think it would be able to figure it out yet.
Yeah,
but D-Reverb exists, so I can't see why that isn't going to start. You know, I'm not drawing any definitive conclusions about this stuff because it's moving really quick. So you know,
yeah. And this is a collaboration. I don't think I said, but with Hans.
Oh well, I did a podcast with Stein ages ago, and he was explaining about how they train the AI. And basically it's all about if you've got access to a huge tranche of data that's already tagged, so you can automate that and just like suck it all in, then it really speeds things up. And I think this is where these opportunities come from for really kind of like training stuff. I don't know if this had come into this particularly, but certainly in the noise, denoise arena and stuff like that. You know, if you've got access to huge amounts of information that you can train your model on.
I think they might have done some of that during the collaboration.
I would be surprised.
To be
you need to train it on something. So,
Cool. Julian, what is your find?
Mine is a genuine kind of like eureka find, actually, which is it's called Audio Plugin Uninstaller. It's not new, but I hadn't tried it before. It's from Wide Blue Sound. It's a free thing, Mac only, and I mean, you can guess what it does. But I've tried it and it seems to do it rather well. So yeah, it's
now
just
that
kind
is
of like,
really, really
here's
handy.
All my plugins, get rid of that. And it gets rid of not just the plugin, because anyone can go into their plugin folder and just delete the plugin, but it gets rid of the other stuff that gets left behind.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I'm guilty. I'm lazy, I'm bad at housekeeping on my computer, and I install and test every single free plugin that we feature on the site. And yeah, bits of most of them are probably still on my computer somewhere. So
I've made that mistake in the past.
Wonderful thing, and it seems to work very well. So, you know, and it's free, so who can complain
about
that?
That's very handy.
I went in on my machine and I just deleted some stuff that I'd forgotten I'd got, and I went, well, that was easy. So, yeah, there we go, find of the week.
Yeah,
I think that's all we've got time for. So we're going to have to leave it there. So thank you very much to William. Thank you to Asher. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.